Beloved Book One, when Nangaku first saw Matsu, he recognized him by intuition as a vessel of the Dharma. He visited Matsu in his cell where he was meditating and asked him, "In practicing sitting meditation, what does your reverence aspire to attain?" "To attain Buddhahood," was Matsu's reply. Nangaku then took up a piece of brick and began to grind it against a rock in front of Matsu's cell. Matsu asked, "What are you grinding it for?" "I want to grind it into a mirror," responded Nangaku. Amused, Matsu said, "How can you hope to grind a piece of brick into a mirror?" Nangaku retorted, "Since a piece of brick cannot be ground into a mirror, how then can you sit yourself into a Buddha?" "What must I do then?" Matsu asked. Nangaku replied, "Take the case of an ox cart. If the cart does not move, do you whip the cart or do you whip the ox?" Matsu remained silent. "In learning sitting meditation," resumed Nangaku, "do you aspire to imitate the sitting Buddha, or do you aspire to learn the sitting Zen? If the former, the Buddha has no fixed postures. If the latter, Zen does not consist in sitting or lying down. The Dharma goes on forever and never abides in anything. You must not, therefore, be attached to nor abandon any particular phase of it. To sit yourself into Buddha is to kill the Buddha. To be attached to the sitting posture is to fail to comprehend the essential principle."
Manisa, we are starting a new series of talks. Matsu, the empty mirror of Zen. Matsu is also known as Basu. I am not using his name Basu because our second series is going to be on the Japanese Basu, the great mystic poet of Zen. And Matsu itself is more meaningful than his popular name Basu. Before I discuss the sutras, a biographical note of Matsu is absolutely needed because he is not known to the world. He is one of those unfortunate geniuses which the world tries in every way to ignore, to forget that even they existed. Even the idea that they existed hurts the ego of the crowd. It has been doing the harm to every genius. Because the very existence of a genius reduces you into a retarded being. Every enlightened master is an evidence that you are living in darkness. That you have to transform your darkness into life, into light. It seems to be such a great task, which it is not, but it appears to be a great task to transform your blindness into clear perceptive eyes, to transform your darkness into beautiful morning light. It is a simple thing, the simplest in the world. But just because it is simple, it does not appeal to the mind. Mind is interested in doing great things. The desire behind every ambition of the mind is to be special. And you can be special only with special achievements. The problem with Zen is it wants you to be utterly simple, not special. It goes against the very desire of the mind, which is not a small phenomenon. It is 4 million years old desire, which everybody is carrying in different lives. And mind cannot understand why you should be simple when you can be special. Why you should be humble when you can be powerful. And mind is heavy, has great weight of the past. The moment the mind sees anyone humble, simple, natural, a Buddha, it immediately condemns such a man because it goes against the whole makeup of the human mind. And in a way, mind is right. To be a Buddha, you will have to drop the mind completely. You will have to become an empty mirror. Ma Tazu was born in China in the year 709. He was the most important figure in the history of Zen after the 6th patriarch Inno. Inno told Nangaku, who would become Ma Tazu's master, about a prophecy that Nangaku would have a spiritual young horse, of a disciple who would trample the whole world. In Chinese, the Ma of Matazu means horse. As a child, Matazu joined a local monastery. Before he was 20, he was already a professed monk. He was a born genius, and even had prophecies about him by other masters. That he is not to be taken as XYZ. He has a possibility of becoming a great master. And the prophecy was fulfilled. Sometimes it is possible, if a master looks at a child, when the child is still uncorrupted by the society, he can see his potential clearly. And that's what another great master, Inno, told to Nangaku. Inno comes to be the sixth patriarch after Bodhidharma, the sixth great master. He told Nangaku that this child is going to become a great master. Be careful. And finally, Matazu became not only a great master, but the second important great master than Inno. Inno's prophecy was fulfilled more than expected. Matazu proved himself to be a greater master than the prophecy contained. But a strange fate that he is not known to the world. Perhaps he was too much ahead of his time. Perhaps he was too far away from the ordinary crowd. Perhaps his way of teaching was so subtle that the ordinary mind was incapable of comprehending it. But whatever the cause, we are resurrecting Matazu again. We want him to be accepted in the history of consciousness to the place that belongs to him. Manisha has asked, when Nangaku first saw Matazu, he recognized him by intuition as a vessel of the Dharma. A master is nothing but clarity, a transparency. To him, things which are invisible to you are visible. The potentiality is something very invisible, mystery of your being. But to the master, it is almost an open book. He can read it. And to have such a master who can read your potentiality and can help you grow according to your potentiality, not according to his ideology, is the greatest blessing one can have. When Nangaku first saw Matazu, he recognized him by intuition as a vessel of the Dharma. These are metaphors, a vessel of the Dharma, that he will become a presence which will send radiation all around. People will come from thousands of miles away, pulled by an invisible force like gravitation, not knowing why they are being pulled to a certain person. They will understand only when they have reached to the person, felt his energy, quenched their thirst, then they will know that some subtle force was pulling them to fulfill their destiny. Just few days before I came to know, that trees have a certain sensibility about water. The scientist who was exploring it was amazed to see that there was no water around except 200 feet away from the tree. There was a water pipe, but the tree sent its roots to the water pipe, forced the water pipe to break, and was releasing and nourishing itself from that water. The scientist was worried because he could not find any water around the tree, and he has not thought that it is carrying water from a water pipe that it has broken with its roots. He was puzzled at how the tree knew about the water pipe 200 feet away. And it has not sent its roots anywhere else. Just directly to the water pipe. The tree cannot live without water. Certainly it must have a certain sensibility, a certain hidden knowledge where the water is. Even though the water is inside a pipe and 200 feet away, the same is the situation if your quest for truth is honest, is not just a curiosity from thousands of miles away. You will start getting pulled to a place where it can be quenched. Existence makes any thirst only after it has created water to quench it. If there are disciples, seekers, searchers, existence manages that they should find a master who can see in them what is their possible future and can help them to be themselves. The master has no ideology. The master is not a missionary. The master does not program you. On the contrary, he deprograms you. He takes away all your ideologies, your prejudices, your very mind, so that only the pure emptiness of your being start growing. The masters have lost. The whole world of that golden quest for truth has become a memory. And one thinks at times, perhaps, all these Buddhas are just our imagination, because they have disappeared from our mundane world. Your function to be here is to bring that golden quest back into the world. And I am trying from all different angles. All these masters are different angles, different approaches to the truth, hoping that something may click in you and open the door that has been closed for years, for centuries. He visited Matazu in his cell, where he was meditating, and asked him, in practicing sitting meditation, what does your reverence aspire to attain? Just take note of two things. Nangaku was a well-established master. Matazu was just a young disciple, but he addresses him as your reverence. Because for the master, your present is not only the present, your future is also the present. He knows you that one day you will become a Buddha. It does not matter that it takes few days or few years or few lives. But because he can see your Buddhahood, even to a disciple he addresses as your reverence. It reminds me about Gautam Buddha's past life when he was not a Buddha. And he heard about a great master who has become enlightened. So he went to see, just out of curiosity, that what this phenomenon of enlightenment is and how it makes a difference in a man. He touched the feet of the man, although he has no intentions, but just as he came into his energy field, spontaneously he touched the feet. He wondered why he is touching the feet, because he has not come there to be a disciple. But the very area, the very atmosphere, the very milieu, and something in his heart start ringing a bell that perhaps you have come close to your home. Without any conscious intention, just spontaneously he touched the feet of the man. It was a miracle to him because he has never touched anybody's feet. And he was not a man of faith or belief. He was a young man and very much argumentative. This was a strange act that he has done. But stranger than this was, when he stood up, the master touched his feet. He said, "What are you doing?" In the first place, I had no idea, no desire, no intention to touch your feet. But it happened. I was just watching that it is happening in spite of me. And now you are touching my feet. I am nobody.
I don't know even the ABC of enlightenment. I have just come here out of curiosity. The master said, you may not know what is contained in your seed, but I know. I can see that one day you are going to become the Buddha. Yesterday I was not a Buddha. Today I am a Buddha. Today you are not a Buddha. Tomorrow you will be a Buddha. This small time difference does not make any difference. Nangaku said to Matasu, who was meditating in his cell, in practicing sitting meditation, what does your reverence aspire to attain? To attain Buddhahood, was Matasu's reply. It has to be understood that Buddhahood cannot be attained. It is already your nature. If you try to attain it, you will miss it. You have just to relax and see within yourself. And the Buddha is already there in its absolute splendor. The word of attainment means something has to be done, somewhere you have to go, and there is a possibility of failure. You may succeed, you may not succeed. And attainment is always of the outside world, of the objective world, riches or fame or power. But Buddhahood is not an attainment. It is simply a remembrance. As if you had forgotten something, and suddenly, in a silent, relaxed state, you remember it. And I think every one of you must have come one time or other to the experience when you know that you know. And you say that it is just on my tip of the tongue, but still you cannot remember. A very strange and weird feeling arises at that time. When you know somebody's name, you are absolutely perfect that you know. You can even close your eyes and see the person. You feel that the name is just on the tongue, but you are stuck there. It is not becoming expressed. And the more you will try, the more it will become difficult. It is a very weird feeling that you know something and you know that you know, and yet you cannot express, and it is just on your tip of the tongue. And the more you try, the more it becomes difficult. The reason is every effort makes your mind tense, and the more the mind is tense, the more it becomes closed. What is needed? You should go into the garden and start digging or watering the plants and forget all about this fellow who you remember and who is just sitting on the tip of your tongue. Just simply spit it out. Get engaged into something simple. Watering the roses. And while you are watering the roses, mind will start relaxing. The closedness will start an opening. And suddenly from nowhere, the name has bubbled up to the surface. While you were trying, it was not possible for you to get it. And when you were not trying, and you simply dropped the idea of getting it, it came back with such a rushing force . To be a Buddha is exactly like that. All that I teach you is not a philosophy. It cannot be even called a teaching. I simply help you to relax to such a point where you can remember what you have forgotten completely. That remembrance will make you aware of your Buddhahood. That remembrance is not an achievement, because the Buddha is already within you. Hence the word attainment is not right. But Matazus reply can be understood with a little more compassion. He does not know what exactly is Buddhahood. Just he has a feeling that there is something to be found. There is something missing in his life to give it meaning and significance. The name of Buddha simply signifies that he is searching for awareness. But because he does not know that for what he is searching is within himself, it is absolutely possible to use the word attainment. He is using a wrong word, but his longing is right. He is on the right path, just he is using a wrong word. And you have to forgive him, because he is only a seeker, he is not a master yet. Nangaku then took up a piece of brick and began to grind it against a rock in front of Matazu's cell. Matazu asked, "What are you grinding it for? This will give you some feel of how Zen masters have been unique. In their efforts to awaken their disciples. This is a strange way, but spontaneous, because nobody else has done it before nor afterwards. Only Nangaku did it. Matazu asked, "What are you grinding it for?" "I want to grind it into a mirror," responded Nangaku. Amused, Matazu said, "How can you hope to grind a piece of brick into a mirror?" Nangaku retorted, "Since a piece of brick cannot be ground into a mirror, how can then you sit yourself into a Buddha? How can you, remaining yourself, sitting here in the cell, become the Buddha? Neither the brick can become a mirror, nor just by sitting you can become a Buddha. You can have the same posture of Buddha, the same lotus posture, but just sitting like him does not mean that you become him. Your effort is as futile as my effort of making a brick into a mirror. What he is saying, in fact, that you cannot become the mirror just by grinding your mind. What you are doing here, just grinding your mind and trying to make a mirror of it. The Buddha is the mirror. The Buddha simply reflects. He does not react. He is always empty like a mirror. Things come before the mirror and go, but they don't leave any trace on the mirror. "What must I do then?" Matazu asked. Nangaku replied, "Take the case of an ox cart. If the cart does not move, do you whip the cart or do you whip the ox?" Matazu remained silent. In learning sitting meditation, resume Nangaku, "Do you aspire to imitate the sitting Buddha, Or do you aspire to learn the sitting Zen? If the former, the Buddha has no fixed posture. Sometimes he stands up. Sometimes he walks. And sometimes he sleeps also. If the latter, Zen does not consist in sitting or lying down. The Dharma goes on forever and never abides in anything. It has no particular form. It has no particular place. It goes on moving into different forms. You will not be able to find it into any form, into any body, into any posture. You will have to look within. Only it is found in the emptiness, because emptiness cannot sit, cannot stand up, cannot lie down. Emptiness is just emptiness. It is eternally empty. That is the only thing that is eternal. Your empty heart. The Dharma goes on forever and never abides in anything. You must not therefore be attached to nor abandon any particular phase of it. To sit yourself into Buddha is to kill the Buddha. It is the majesty of Zen to say things directly, straightforward. No other religion has that courage. Nangaku is saying to Matazu to sit yourself into Buddha, taking the Buddha posture, is to kill the Buddha. Don't murder before dying. Gautam Buddha has said to his disciples, don't make my statues, because that will give a wrong impression to people. They will think that if you sit in this posture, you will become a Buddha. But who hears? Today there are more statues of Buddha than of anybody else. In fact, in languages like Arabic, Persian, Urdu, because Mohammedans are against statues, their word for statue is Bhut, and Bhut is just a form of Buddha. In Sanskrit, Buddha is the original root of Buddha. To be aware. From Buddha, it is very easy to make Buddha. This happened because Mohammedans came across more statues of Buddha than anybody else, and they were destroying statues. Wherever they went, they were destroying statues. They have destroyed beautiful pieces of art. To be against a statue does not mean that you have to destroy statues. You can see this way how the unconscious mind moves from one extreme to another extreme. Gautama Buddha has said, "Don't make my statues." Because people may think that just sitting in the lotus posture and you can become aware. Just leave it that awareness has no form and you have to find it within you. You cannot find it in an outside Buddha statue. Not to distract them by outside statue, because man's mind is such, it can be distracted by anything, it becomes attached to anything. I have heard about a Buddhist nun who has her own small a statue of Gautama Buddha made of solid gold, and she used to carry that while she was traveling from monastery to monastery. But her problem was, every morning she will worship her Buddha. She will burn incense, but incense cannot be directed. It may go to some other Buddha in the temple. Now this was very bad. His own Buddha is sitting there, and the incense and the perfume that she has offered has flown away to some other Buddha. There used to be, there still are, temples with many Buddhas, and she was so much attached to her own Buddha that it has become now a problem. Her Buddha and other Buddhas, so she finally find out a strategy that the incense reaches to her Buddha, because she is offering her incense and other Buddhas are getting it. She made a small bamboo just like a hollow passage. So she will keep on her incense burner, moving the perfume with the hollow bamboo towards the nose of her own Buddha. But then there arose another problem. The nose of her Buddha became black. She was in great stress. a gold Buddha, solid gold Buddha with a black nose does not suit. He looks almost like a nigger. She inquired older monks that what to do now. If I don't put the bamboo, the incense, nobody knows where it goes. It goes to all kinds of Buddhas. And I am offering it to my Buddha. And now because of this bamboo, the nose and a part of the face has become black. What I should do? The master, he was asking, laughed. He said, you are an idiot, woman. You don't understand a simple fact that all the Buddhas are the same. They are the statues of the same person. And you have become attached to your Buddha. And the whole teaching of Buddha is non-attachment. It is perfectly right that Buddha has shown you that attachment makes you a nigger. So beware of it. Just go to a goldsmith so he can clean and polish your Buddha. But from now onwards, just think of the Buddha. Whoever Buddha, whichever Buddha gets the incense, perhaps he deserves it. And you should be happy that it has reached to somebody, because all those statues represent the same person. Buddhists, the followers of Buddha, did not hear his last words, that don't make my statues. Let me represent the formless, only the fragrance, not the flower. And there has been another extreme. Muhammad was against statues, because if you worship a statue, it is a stone, and worshipping a stone is a barrier into the worship of God. So all barriers have to be removed. It was perfectly okay if somebody was willing to remove it, but Mohammedans started removing other people's barriers. They forgot all about God and anything. Their whole history became a destruction of statues. Neither worshipping a statue you can reach to the Buddha, nor by destroying the statues you can reach to the Buddha. You have to go within words. Outside there is nothing. That can give you the eternal, the ultimate the truth that can quench your thirst, to sit yourself into Buddha is to kill the Buddha. To be attached to the sitting posture is to fail to comprehend the essential principle. The essential principle is never objective. It is your subjectivity. The essential principle has no form. It is absolute emptiness. The essential principle is a mirror. It reflects only. It does not make any judgment of good or bad, of beauty or ugliness. Chi Hsien wrote, "I possess potentiality. It is seen in a blink. He who does not understand cannot be called a monk." It applies to you exactly the way it was applicable to Chi Hsien's disciples. "I possess potentiality. It is seen in a blink. It is not a far away phenomenon. Just close your eyes and look silently deep, and it is there. It has been there for eternity, just waiting for you to come home." Manisha has asked, "Beloved Bhagwan, are we all the 10,000 Buddhas, potential vessels of the Dharma?" Manisha as being the potential vessels of Dharma, nobody is an exception. You all have the potential, the same potential. You all have the same highest peaks of consciousness as any Buddha. But you have to go inwards and find out your treasures. Outside you are a beggar. Everybody is a beggar. Alexander the Great came to India just after 300 years Buddha had died. He wanted to meet some master. The name and the fame of Buddha has reached far away source, even to Greece and Athens. Alexander's master was the father of Western logic, Aristotle. Aristotle has told him that you are going to conquer the world. You must reach India. I don't want anything as a present for me to bring. Just meet an enlightened master. I have heard so much, but it seems to be so ungraspable. And moreover, because I am a logician, I cannot accept anything unless it is rationally valid with evidence, argument. Returning back, Alexander remembers that he has to find out a master. He inquired people, they said it is very difficult. Even if you can find a master, we don't think he will be agreeable to go with you to Greece. Alexander said, don't be worried about that. If I want to take the Himalayas to Greece, I can manage that. Finally, he found a master. Many people said that, yes, that person is a realized one. He lives naked by the side of the river. Alexander reached to the man and with his naked sword he said, I want you to come with me. You will be given royal welcome. Every facility will be applied to you. You will be a royal guest, so don't be worried about anything. But I want you to come to Greece because my master wants to see an enlightened man. The old man laughed. He said, in the first place, put your sword back into its sheath. This is not a way to meet a master and get down from your horse. Alexander has never heard such authoritative words from a naked man who has nothing. And the man said, remember that you may conquer the whole world, but you are still a beggar. Now you are begging me to come with you. And as far as I am concerned, I have come to the point where there is no movement. I don't go anywhere. I have never gone anywhere. I have been always now and here. Time has stopped. mind has stopped, Alexander was very angry. He said, I will cut your head if you don't come with me. He said, that's a good idea. You can take the head, but I am not coming. And remember, just as you will be cutting my head, you will be watching the head falling on the ground, I will also be watching. Watching is our secret. Tell your master and take my head. Now it is very difficult to take the head of such a man who is not afraid at all. Alexander said, I have to go without a master. The old man said, tell your master that enlightenment is not something that you can bring it from outside. You cannot export it. You have to explore it within yourself. Drop all logic and all rationality, all mind, and go inwards as deep as you can. At the very end of your search in, you will find the Buddha. My coming is of no use. I would not have refused. There is no difference for me where I am. But seeing me, do you see any enlightenment? Neither your master will be able to see any enlightenment. To see enlightenment, you need a little bit of experience of enlightenment. At least some meditativeness. And I don't think in the West meditation has even entered into the consciousness of people. Strangely, meditation has remained even today. Alexander's 2300 years have not been of any help. Meditation is still an Eastern concept. Is still only in the East, people become thirsty to inquire within. My effort is to spread the fire all over the world, to destroy the distinction between East and West. But every hindrance is being created. The fire of meditation you all have to take to your countries. Just small beginnings, and soon it can become a wild fire. Except meditation, there is no way to know yourself in your purity, in your utter innocence, just like a mirror. But you are all vessels of the Dhamma, of the basic principle. You may recognize it, you may not recognize it. You are carrying it, you are pregnant with it. Whether you give birth or not, that is a different matter. Just a little relaxation, just a little looking inwards, and doors of immense potentialities open up. You are no more a beggar. Without conquering the world, you have conquered the whole universe. Just conquer yourself. The rains have come. To hear your laughter and Sardar Gurdayal Singh has started it. Three sannyasin kids meet in the ashram and start talking together. You know, says the German kid, my uncle is a priest and all the people call him Holy Father. That's nothing. Says the Japanese kid, my grandfather is a Zen master. And even the emperor touches his feet. That is nothing. You guys, says the American kid, my mother weighs 300 pounds. And when she walks down the street, people take one look at her and say, my God. Father finger has a little trouble with a 16-year-old blonde, and the police, he goes immediately to see his lawyer, Boris Babelbrain. If you win the case for me, says finger, I will give you $1,000. Okay, agrees Babel Brain, get some witnesses. Father Finger searches around his Paris and manages to find two old drunks and a bag lady for his witnesses. They tell the right story and he wins the case. I won your case for you, says Babel Brain. Now what about my $1,000? Okay, replies Father Finger, just get some witnesses. At a chic cocktail party in Hollywood, Sheikh Ali Baba, the fabulously rich oil millionaire, meets Brenda Babelbrain and falls madly in love with her. Sheikh Ali Baba approaches her husband, Boris the liar, and leads him into a quiet corner. "I must sleep with your wife," says Ali Baba, "and in return I will pay you her weight in gold." Boris hesitates, and then he insists that he will need a few days to think the deal over. Ask Ali Baba anxiously. "No, no," cries Boris, "to fatten her up." Nivedana. Let your body be completely frozen. Close your eyes and look inwards with as much urgency and totality as possible. Deeper and deeper, you are entering the space we call the Buddha. This beautiful evening can become a great radical change in your life if you are courageous enough to go on just like an arrow to the very center of your being. You are just a witness, an empty mirror. To make it more clear, Nivedana, relax. Watch, the body is not you, the mind is not you. Only the watching, only the witnessing is you. This witnessing is your eternity. With this witnessing comes all the ecstasies and all the blessings existence can offer to you. The deeper you are, the more watchful you are, the more silent, the more peaceful. It is a great event every evening. You go a little deeper into your Buddhahood. Look around this empty space within you. You have to remember it when you come back from the inner journey. 24 hours. Nivedana, come back, but come back as Buddhas, peaceful, silent, graceful, with a beatitude. Sit down for a few moments, just as mirrors. Remembering your inner world, collecting the experience so that it can become an undercurrent in your daily life. I don't want anybody to escape from life. I want everybody to make the life richer, more blissful, more ecstatic. I'm all for life, because to me life is the only God. The Buddha is another name for life. Okay, Manisha?
Yes, Bhagwan.
Can we celebrate the 10,000 Buddhas?
Yes, Bhagwan.